This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey. To the journey.
Hey everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Liam Smart and with me again is...
Suzanne Williamson.
Suzanne, how are you? You're back.
I'm back. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, except we're missing Zach again.
Oh yeah, he isn't here. I wonder if he was caught up in some sort of transporter accident.
Oh, he got eaten by a worm. You got the phage. So yeah, maybe he was actually stolen by Alice.
Oh,
that's what I reckon. He must have been stolen by Alice. I feel like I'm the only consistent one right now.
You are.
That's okay. What have you been up to this week?
I've been getting over a cold.
Oh, gross.
That's about it. And working on more stained glass projects.
Oh, yeah.
That's all.
Some of those look really good.
Why, thank you.
You're very welcome, Suzanne. I've basically done nothing but work. I've been editing an Edge episode. It got super hot here again, then it got super wet, which is good because we need rain here.
Yes, you do.
Yep. So we've had a whole day of rain and it's been lovely.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Except you need to stop with the work.
I know.
Get out and enjoy.
I know. Uni goes back in just shy of a month and I go away on holiday in a couple of weeks. So that'll be nice. Going to a pleasure planet.
That'll be fun. Have some pecan pie.
I don't like pecan pie, but I like pleasure.
Okay.
That is not intended to sound creepy.
That's good to know that you like pleasure.
Very much. Oh dear. So today, Suzanne, we decided that we would talk about fan fiction.
Fan fiction.
Yeah, why not?
I used to write fan fiction.
So what can you explain to me what fan fiction is?
It's stories that people come up with that they would have liked to have seen on screen, but were never going to get it. In my case, it would have been X-rated and never been allowed to appear on television.
Oh, okay. So I guess maybe we shouldn't talk about fanfic then if it's X-rated.
No, it's always somebody getting together with somebody else in the turbo lift.
So one can dream about it then.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, listeners, we weren't going to be talking about fanfic. It was something that we were thinking of talking about, and we couldn't work out how to talk about it without getting an R rating for this podcast.
Yes.
And Trek FM is not an R-rated podcast network. So instead, we're actually going to be talking about some Janeway command decisions.
Yay!
Yeah, so I know that Shara and Tristan did this in episodes 59 and 83, but that was like 5 years ago and 200 episodes, so you haven't really heard our opinions on it.
That's right, and we have opinions.
Mm-hmm. That's my middle name. So, Suzanne, what are your initial thoughts on some of Janeway's command decisions? Like, overall, on a nutshell, do you think she makes good or bad ones?
Oh... Overall, I think she should have stayed a scientist.
Really?
Instead of put in charge of people.
So you don't think that she's really a people manager?
She manages people well, but She says she's going to stick to the Prime Directive, but she doesn't stick to the Prime Directive.
Yeah, Prime Directive is not something she's very good at, hey?
Yeah, which I can understand, because they're the only Federation ship in the Delta Quadrant that they know of. So, really, who's watching? If you have to bend it, break it.
Yeah, it comes down to a question of whether the Prime Directive is a rule to follow or a moral rule which you can bend. And where your opinion on that lies pretty much directs your opinion on what she does with her command decisions.
Yeah. I think in the first episode, she broke the Prime Directive.
Oh, God, yeah.
With Caretaker. It's like, I don't think you should have done that. And then tell everybody we're going to be a Starfleet crew and follow the Prime Directive. You just broke it.
Yeah, and then to break it again in many other episodes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't think she should have stayed a scientist. I think that she done a great job of being a captain, but some of her decisions are obviously questionable, and some of them are great decisions that I don't think a lot of other captains would have been able to make.
Fair enough. Maybe she could have been a captain of just a science vessel.
What, and then let it get overrun by a bunch of tribbles? The trouble with Chakotay.
Hey, that, I would sign up for that episode. If there's just a bunch of Chakotays running around the ship, I'm down for that.
Wait, Chakotay tribbles?
Yes.
No.
They all have the little tattoo on their forehead.
Oh, God, that just... I don't even know how that would... Oh, now I'm just imagining, like, Chakotay's head without a body bouncing around, but, like, a little bit hairier. And I'm not really sure how I feel about this.
What if it was salt and pepper Chakotay and not, like, dyed black hair Chakotay?
Well, I suppose that makes for a more textured tribble.
Yes, better looking.
I was going to say something even worse.
It hurts to laugh.
Okay, we've digressed already, and we're, what, like, 5 minutes in?
Yeah, about that.
Obviously, we've been trying to think of some other Janeway command decisions other than the blatantly obvious Caretaker one, but let's quickly start with Caretaker. Yes or no? Should she have done it?
It would have made for a very short show if she didn't, so she kind of had to.
Well, I mean, let's take ourselves out of being in the show and just on that ship and... Imagine if we were there sitting on that ship. Do you think that was a bad idea, blowing up the Caretaker? See, I'm of two minds about it because, so, I mean, the whole idea of Starfleet is to be able to, I guess, to protect civilizations in a way, but obviously not to interrupt. So that's where the Prime Directive comes in. But at the same time, I feel like you wouldn't be able to live with yourself knowing that you've used the Caretaker's array going home, knowing that the Kazon will totally override the Ocumpa.
But the energy reserves that are pushed to the Ocumpa at the end are going to run out anyway.
Yeah, but then you know you've destroyed the Ocumpa. It's like you've had the ability to help.
But they're going to be destroyed eventually.
I suppose, yeah, when it runs out. But at least the Ocumpa would have known what's going on and they could have attempted to do something about it. I don't know. I can live with myself knowing that I could have helped in some way. I mean, yeah, I suppose you are right in that the energy reserves would have run out and that they would have just snuffed it. But I do feel like Janeway made the right decision, even though some people are like, nah.
Ultimately, the Caretaker is the one that made the wrong decision to begin with.
Hmm. To play devil's advocate, why is it Janeway's responsibility to fix what the Caretaker's done?
Well, I'm not saying she should fix it. And by her destroying the Caretaker, that's what she's attempting to do is fix it.
Hmm. Because she says in the episode, we didn't mean to get involved, but we are. But as I say, Tuvok goes, well, it's the Prime Directive. We shouldn't get involved. And obviously, the Prime Directive is just something that says we shouldn't interfere in the development of other civilizations or just interfere in general. And boy, did she interfere.
The Caretaker did to start with.
Well, yeah, well, the Caretaker's not bound by the Prime Directive, I suppose, are they?
I know.
They're just like a gelatinous blob of yuckiness.
Until they turn into a giant salt crystal.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Why were they a salt crystal? You could put a light in them, Caretaker salt lamp. They could have taken it home and marketed that.
Neelix could have sold them to people along the way.
Oh, God, better than his Leola root stew, I suppose. Oh, he could have shaved it off in his thing for, like, salt, seasoning.
It probably would have made his food taste a whole lot better. Seasoned with the caretaker.
So do you think she should have done it? I can't remember what you said. She should have blown up the caretaker?
In some ways I do, and in some ways I don't.
It's a very tricky decision to make. And that's why there's always been so much debate for the last 25 years about it.
Yeah. Because you could see both sides of it. It's like, yeah, get home, save these people. There's just, yeah, it was her Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, exactly. It is definitely a no-win scenario, but I think it was a good decision to have done it.
But you're a better man than I am.
I would feel terribly guilty.
Yeah.
I suppose while we're staying with caretaker just for a second, she was so adamant on not giving the case on any technology. And that that was all throughout the whole first couple of seasons, which...
Yes.
When you consider it, doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't she give them that if she gave, like, the Hirogen?
That's on my notes.
Yeah, okay, well...
That is totally on my notes.
Take it away.
By giving the holo technology to the Hirogen, it's violating the Prime Directive. We go back to the Prime Directive again.
Mm-hmm.
If she felt the need to break the rule there, why didn't she give technology to make water to the Kazon?
I mean, all it is water.
Yeah.
Well, they could have... I'm sure they could have limited it in some way to be like, nope, you can only make water.
It's far less innocuous than giving holo technology, which you can, you know, kill people with.
Well, exactly. And just the moral implications of that, because she knows that the Doctor is sentient. Who's to say that the holograms that the Hirogen make will not become sentient? And of course they did, in flesh and blood.
They did, exactly.
I think giving the Hirogen that technology was an absolutely terrible idea.
It was extremely terrible, and I'm so glad that she saw the consequences of that.
I mean, half the time she never sees the consequences.
She would have just gone on thinking, oh yeah, that was fine and we made it out okay. But no, you didn't.
I mean, the Hirogen were a decent alien. And when I say a decent alien, a decent enemy alien. I wouldn't say they're decent aliens in terms of they like to kill people, but, you know.
They were a decent adversary.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Ding, 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 ding.
But yeah, I mean, that's just another one of strange decisions. I don't think that was a good idea.
Not at all.
No, not at all. Now, do you know what I also think is a silly one? Going through Krenim space.
Oh, yes.
What? Why? I mean, yeah, of course, the whole timeline never existed in the end because, woo, the reset button. But why would you go through Krenim space? Firstly, you're violating someone's space. It's like, nah, I'm sorry. Your ship ain't big enough. You can't violate someone else's space just because they don't look superior.
Like a threat.
You know? Like, it's like, oh, sorry, you're inferior to us. We're just going to come straight through your space. Especially... Yeah. With that other ugly alien that was on board that was saying, nah, this ain't their space, don't worry about it. But what's also dumb is that she knew about the Krenim.
Exactly! She was warned!
She was warned in the time-traveling Kes episode.
Exactly. Why not listen? And you know Kes made a record of it because that's why she skipped the party at the end.
Yeah, well, she had to make a whole report about it.
Yeah.
Right. And she has absolutely no idea in that season 4 episode when it started. It's like, oh, the Krenim, they don't ring a bell.
Lights should have gone off. Like, ding, 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 ding. Flashing red light, Krenim. Wait a minute. I know that name.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I suppose if you look outside of the show in terms of the creation, they did want to make the Year of Hell a whole season-long arc. So that was probably something to do with the reason why it was in before and after. Sort of putting it up, but yeah, no, that was conveniently forgotten, and that was one of, I think, one of Janeway's worst decisions. Fortunately, the reset button saved her this time. Staying on that episode, ramrodding that ship, killing herself, and destroying Voyager was a great decision. She really thought that one through in a split second.
With the best scene, where she has that pocket watch in her hand, looks over at Chakotay's chair. Oh,
the feels.
It is. Scruffy Chakotay is the best Chakotay.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't like the pocket watch.
I actually cosplayed that Janeway, complete with pocket watch.
Really? I thought you were to say you cosplayed a pocket watch.
That's my next one.
It's like you walk up and you're like, you know what? I'm no character. I'm actually the pocket watch that Janeway received.
I'm that special pocket watch.
Can you please do that? I really need to see that.
I have the body type for that now, so it'd be perfect.
Oh, no, don't say that. It's almost like the clock from Beauty and the Beast.
Cogsworth.
Yes, he can be like that, except a pocket watch version. So were they the two that were on your list?
I didn't know I was going listy.
Oh, I wasn't really going to go listy, but I was just wanting to bring your ones up before I start just slamming out mine. I don't like to take over.
So we did Caretaker, Holotechnology for Hirogen. My other one that I had made a note about, which I'm so proud of myself for making notes, was aligning with the Borg against Species 8472.
So you think that was a good idea?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Explain.
I think she should have actually contacted and spoke with Species 8472 and aligned with them.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
And eradicated the Borg. Because then we would, for one thing, we would know their actual species name instead of their Borg designation.
Aren't they called like the Undine or something in Star Trek Online? I can't remember what they're called.
I don't remember. But I wanted to hear it on the show, not in the video game.
Well, yeah, because it's not technically Alpha Canon if it's not on TV.
Also, by aligning with the Borg, she destroyed an entire species of peceful people. Arcturus' species.
The species 116, the one that was in Open Fear?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
it's like
that's
she
on my
destroyed
list
an entire species of people.
Because she helped the Borg defeat Species 8472. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Arcturus was not happy about that one. And I mean, that was almost going to get the Voyager crew assimilated again anyway.
And how cool would it have been to have one of Species 8472 join Voyager for the journey home?
Oh, yeah. Zach and I were talking about that on one episode.
That would have been cool.
I mean, it would be a bit bloody expensive.
Well, yeah, but they could have changed into a human form like they did in that one episode.
Ooh.
Whose name is escaping me, with Boothby. They could have had Boothby on the show. Was it In the Flesh?
In the Flesh, that's it.
Oh, gosh, that just came to my head. I'm proud of myself. I remembered something.
But yeah, but don't you think, obviously we didn't see it on screen, but do you reckon they made in some form of assessment that Species 8472, based on what Kes was saying, was already too far gone in this particular space? Obviously, they live in fluidic space and they've been invaded. Do you think that they were too far gone with normal space, or vacuumous space, should I say, to be reasoned with?
Well, I don't think so, because they were able to be reasoned with in the Flesh.
Yeah, I guess.
Which was after, you know, they helped the Borg destroy everything.
Well, and that was in the episode where they wanted to destroy humanity to work out, you know.
Yeah.
So I suppose they could have been brought around. I don't know. I do think aligning herself with the Borg was a powerful choice. But yeah, it might have been not a great idea.
Well, I don't think it was that powerful because the Borg were losing that war. Why would you pick the underdog?
But she picked that not just for a war to win. She picked it to try and get herself through Borg space.
Which I'm sure Species 8472 could have got you around it through fluidic space.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Just go straight past it, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just about to say that then Kes just threw them past Borg space anyway, so there was no point in that. But
yeah.
Kes wouldn't have probably left the show if we didn't have 7 of 9.
We could have gotten rid of Harry, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I'm all for getting
or
rid of Harry.
Or just kept him with the tendrils in his nose. That was kind of cool.
What, keep him with tendrils in his nose?
Yeah, like now he's part Species 8472.
Actually, that would have been great if he was part Species 8. It might have made him more interesting. Less whiny.
Less whiny, yeah.
Exactly.
He might have got a promotion for that.
Yeah, can you imagine? It's like, oh, Harry, it's okay. We'll promote you now because you've got tendrils coming out your nose.
So you're interesting.
I promote my staff based on interest, not ability. You bore me, Ensign. I demote you to crewman.
Go scrub the pattern buffers.
Yeah, why not? So, I mean, I reckon, obviously, we've pretty much said that all of our decisions are bad so far.
Well, no, there was the one that was bad and good.
True. I mean, I'm on the fence with Scorpion, I guess.
Oh, Scorpion.
Yeah. Now, dare I mention this? Dare I mention the T word?
Ooh. Just stab me in the heart.
Ooh, okay. Well, I'm going to mention it because this is obviously the biggest command decision that I think Janeway makes in the whole entire show in terms of should she have done it or shouldn't she have done it? What do you think about Tuvix?
No way. She should not have murdered him.
Is that your strong opinion?
That is my very strong opinion. If it had been within a day of them being joined or maybe a week, I could see that.
I think it was only like 2 weeks or something, wasn't it?
You could be right. Yeah, 2 weeks.
I'll just look it up. Stardate 49655.2 to 49678.4. So I'm just going to assume that's 2 weeks. Because I know how to read stardates, not. So, I mean, okay, so you really don't think he should have been murdered?
No.
Because he's been in that crew for a while.
He'd started to make a place for himself, make connections with people. He was his own person. To just murder him? I'm sorry, and that's what it was. It was murder. Just because Kes came to you saying she can't live without Neelix. Because really, it wasn't any... She wasn't thinking about Tuvok or her friendship with him. It was all because Kes came to her and was sad about Neelix.
Yeah, well, I mean, that surely wasn't the reason for it. Surely not. Because you know what my very strong opinion is? I'm all for it.
Oh, stab me in the heart.
I thought the best decision was to get rid of Tuvix and split them back up again.
No. I would have liked to have had Tom Wright on the show for far longer. He's such a good actor.
I mean, yeah, Tuvix was a great actor, but not Tuvix, but you know what I mean. The actor done a great job. But he was two people. They're in the middle of nowhere. It was the chief of security and the cook. I mean, yeah, the cook is a bit maybe pointless, but he also played a... Neelix also played a morale officer role. I think it was morale officer by that time. You needed both of them. You couldn't get that from from Tuvix, from the combined. You needed both of them. So the best decision was to split him up and have your two crew members that you know that could do a good enough job.
But Tuvix still had all of that knowledge. He could have done.
And he couldn't do both jobs at once.
Chief of security. Well, really, what is Neelix doing as morale officer? Bringing up hors d'oeuvres to the bridge when they're in the middle of a crisis?
Yeah.
No.
Being a pain in the butt.
Wanting to get off the ship when they run into trouble and then come back on.
Yeah, true. You see, I don't know, I'm all for the murder. I mean, I can see the absolute moral implications of it, but if I was sitting on that ship, if I were Janeway, I would do it.
I would not.
You know. See, so I think it's a good decision, which I feel like I'm going to get a lot of hatred for.
No, there are some people that feel that that was a good decision. And there are people like me who feel it wasn't, and we're just not going to see eye to eye on it. That's all.
Oh, God.
But we can still have our opinions.
Oh, that's right. I mean, yeah, it is a very difficult choice, and I've read so much about people's opinions, but I just can't come back, or I just can't get past the whole, you needed Tuvok and you needed Neelix. I mean, yeah, you can say that both of them are in there, but I think Tuvix is one of the best episodes of Voyager for that reason, because it really, really makes you think. Yes. If not all of Star Trek.
It is a very polarizing episode.
Mm.
You either feel one way about it or the other.
That dreaded T word.
There's no in between.
Let's move on to what I reckon would be a universally accepted good decision for Janeway, and that is her actions in the Void. So she created a little mini Federation.
Oh, the mini Federation, yes.
So that's actually her sticking to the principles and not going out and attacking people.
Yes, that was a very good decision.
So it was the only way that they were going to get out of there. They're not going to get out of there out of sheer force, are they?
No, they needed more than one ship.
Yeah, and working together is what Starfleet is all about. And the Federation is all about. And she actually, for once, stuck to some Starfleet rules.
Although I don't know that the Federation or Starfleet would... I don't know what I'm trying to say. Scratch that. Never mind. I was thinking of her court-martial.
Was she court-martialed?
No. No, she was not. She was made an admiral.
Yeah, I was going to say, where'd you get the court-martial from?
She should have been.
Oh, you reckon? Oh, so you... Hang on a minute. Listeners, here is something never thought I would hear come out of Suzanne Williamson's mouth. She just said to me that Janeway should have been court-martialed.
I don't see the Federation and Starfleet agreeing with all of these decisions that she made throughout the 7 years, especially when Admiral Janeway goes back in time to bring them home sooner.
Oh my God, that was probably one of the worst decisions that she made.
Yeah, because you know the time cops are right on her tail.
Yeah.
They told her not to mess with time ever again, and what did she do?
Mess with time to save her friends. I mean, I haven't got that many issues with Endgame, but, you know, it is clearly a bad decision, like almost a criminal decision because she knows she's purposely doing it.
And she stole things. That's criminal.
Well, right, yeah, it could cause a diplomatic incident with the Klingons.
Yeah.
But you think she should have been court-martialed for everything that she's done in the 7 years she was in the Delta Quadrant and not be made an admiral?
I don't want it to be that way, but I think that's what would have happened, you know, if they stuck to their Federation and Starfleet rules. Instead of, oh, you got everybody home. Here, you're an admiral.
Do you know what? I thought she was made an admiral because she got those people home, regardless of what it took. But now when you think about it, yeah, she did a lot of bad things that you could be court-martialed for, I guess, if she were in the Alpha Quadrant. Mm-hmm. Would that mean the rest of the crew should be court-martialed as well? Or just her?
I would think just like it all fell onto Captain Kirk in the voyage home, It would all fall onto Janeway.
Do you know what? That would have been good to see. Again, if Voyager got home midway through season 7 mm-hmm. and see the ramifications of it. Or even if we see something about Janeway in Picard.
Yeah.
Just to see what she's doing, whether she left Starfleet.
Yeah, I would like to know what she's doing. I just want confirmation in Picard that Chakotay and Seven are no longer a thing. I want that confirmation.
Can you imagine if they are married and together? That would be like the ultimate FU.
That would be, oh, I would be so angry. Angry. It's like, Kirsten Beyer, you stabbed me in the heart. Why?
What do you think of Janeway allowing the whole crew to purposely be copied at the end of Demon?
Ooh, yeah.
Like, what kind of a decision is that?
And not just the crew, the ship too.
Everything. How they could masquerade as the crew and cause all sorts of issues.
Like the fake,
like the fake
Janeway did.
Yeah, like the fake people in Live Fast and...
And Prosper.
Yeah, no. Was it Live Fast and Prosper?
I thought it was.
I was about to call it The Fast and the Furious. It is Live Fast and Prosper.
Yay!
I thought it was more Live Fast and Furious. Can you imagine the Vulcans saying that? Live Fast and Furious.
If they look like Vin Diesel, that would be cool.
Vin Diesel the Vulcan.
I so want to see that now.
I'm not sure I do. I honestly really feel like that is a really dumb decision. Just the amount of havoc that could be caused just by having a complete copy of the crew. Like, they could have gone and made all sorts of alliances. They could have got ahead like they did, because we saw in Course Oblivion they were way in front. And they could have caused all sorts of havoc. I mean, they would have had the same memories and ideals, but they could have made very different decisions.
Which they must have, because they got ahead of them. And also, what if they both got home? You know, what if the demon ship did not fall apart and everybody wasn't melting everywhere?
Yeah. So, Demon was the 92nd episode, and Course Oblivion was the 112th episode. So, there were 20 episodes in between that. So, that's mostly Season 5. So, Season 4 finale was Hope and Fear. So, there was nothing absolutely major about that.
Uh-huh.
But I just want to see what episodes occurred in between Demon and Course Oblivion. We've had In the Flesh, so they could have had all sorts of problems in the Flesh. That was there.
Yeah.
So they could be the reason that, or part of the reason why Species 8472 went to try and destroy Earth, because they could have had something from the Course Oblivion copies or the Silver Blood crew. They could have done something to the Undine. You've had Counterpoint.
Ah, that's why Kashyyyk is so annoyed. Rex.
Maybe Prax had a relationship with the Silver Blood Janeway.
Oh, that's kind of gross.
There wasn't really any major episodes of which major decisions could have occurred. I mean, there was Timeless. Most of them are all quite simple. 30 Days, Bride of Chaotica, Latent Image. The only big ones in between there is also Dark Frontier. So, I mean, I suppose...
How did they get ahead of them? I don't understand.
Well, they probably didn't stop around all sorts of things. They didn't have issues. Maybe they didn't have issues with the Manaeans, or... God, that Once Upon a Time episode was in there as well. I hated that episode.
Ugh. No more Flotter ever. Please, no.
It was that was weird. Flotter was weird. And I'm standing by that's probably my second or third least favorite episode behind Nemesis and the fight. I don't know, but there's nothing in the actual episode list that I guess that the Silver Blood crew could have actually run amok in, but they could have made all sorts of issues for the Voyager crew. And that's something that maybe I would have been nice to see. Kind of like in the same vein as Live the Fast and the Furious Voyager episode. What about Equinox and how absolutely psycho she went?
Oh, she went all kinds of crazy. That's why she would be court-martialed. Equinox, right there.
Why?
Gone. She threatened to kill Noah Lessing.
Yeah, I mean, that is bad.
That's extremely bad.
It's almost threatened. Well, it's almost basically torture to start with, isn't it? But she's almost lost the plot in that episode. Just to say that she really wants to stick to Starfleet's ideals when we've seen, you know, in the last five seasons that she'll make all sorts of strange decisions which aren't quite following Starfleet's ideals.
Yeah, but that, all of her thought process in that, I don't think I ever recovered from. I never saw her the same way.
Really?
After that.
Really?
Yeah.
Elaborate.
Just because she was willing to go that far to torture and possibly murder someone in her charge. That, no, you're a Starfleet captain, no.
So that really changed your view of Janeway?
Yeah. I mean, I still loved her, but oh man.
To sort of put a little dampener on...
It tarnished her.
Tarnished, that's the word, yeah.
It tarnished her in my mind.
Do you reckon it tarnished her with part of her crew as well? Do you reckon that's why Chakotay started moving on to Seven? Because she's like, oh, maybe not Janeway.
It might have played a part somewhere in the back of his mind.
Mm. And the rest of the crew were probably a bit woof about it.
Yeah, they're probably like, oh, I better stay on her good side.
I feel like there are a few we're missing as well here. Oh, do you know what? One time that I really enjoyed her actually breaking the Prime Directive because she was still following rules is the Omega Directive.
That was good because she needed teamwork to.
That was a great decision. So even though she wasn't able to actually do it as per rules, yes, she broke Starfleet's rules. But do you know how is she going to make a whole ship of 130 to 150 people do what she wants without telling them why? So you're not supposed to question the command decision, but one captain in the middle of nowhere. You're going to need the help from her crew. And yeah, she only kept it to the senior officers, of which I do not understand why Harry's a senior officer because he's just an ensign. Anyway, let's...
Because he's on the bridge.
Yeah, but that doesn't make him senior. Why wasn't Ayala there? He's always on the bridge, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why didn't he have something to say? And he's a lieutenant. Ever. Because he's Maquis and he's wearing that different little... He can't be a senior officer.
Yeah, you can just imagine Janeway going, Mummy, I want to be in your meetings. Anyway, so, I mean, that was one of Janeway's best decisions, I think, bringing on the senior crew to try and help her with what is, you know, a really, really bad potential thing that could destroy their trip home, which is a complete opposite to what she's done in Caretaker. She inhibited her way home in Caretaker to try and help someone else. But in this case, the Omega Directive, the Omega Molecule would have stopped her from being able to get home, potentially, because it would have destroyed subspace or whatever. Mm-hmm. So she actually harms the aliens that are on that planet because they were trying to find a new source of energy. And so she effectively screws over them because they're like, no, the Omega particle will destroy subspace. And they were a pre-warp society, so they'd have no idea about it.
Yeah.
So she effectively screwed that particular race over. But it was...
Yeah.
So which is what she should have done in Caretaker, if you look at it that way, even though I still think she made the right decision in Caretaker.
Share the knowledge. That's what she was doing. She was sharing the knowledge. That's all.
And
hey, you're going to mess things up. Don't do this.
She should have probably stunned Seven as well to stop her from bringing the...
Well, I don't know.
I mean, that was one of my favorite scenes, seeing Seven of Nine look into that chamber to see the perfection of the Omega molecules as it all comes together.
She needed that. She needed to see the perfection because that's all she's ever wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
In her mind, being Borg. Borg want perfection, which, honestly, there is no such thing. Move on, Borg. There's no perfection anywhere.
Excuse me? Aren't I perfection?
You are this short of perfection.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Just a little smidge short of perfection. There's always room to grow.
Oh, of course.
Always room to get better.
I am Borg. Do you know what? I think I'd like to be a Borg. just for a day. Like work experience. Work experience on a Borg cube. Like the full assimilation and everything.
No thanks, I just want to be a Q.
Yeah, but then you can do whatever you want, that'll get boring.
Exactly.
What would you do if you were a Q?
Well, first I'd be the scarecrow, and then I'd be the dog.
You'd be Chakotay's bar of soap as well, wouldn't you?
No, you don't know where that bar of soap goes, no.
It's gross. No, I think I'd be a Borg because it'll be fun.
I don't think that would be fun. Someone constantly, you know, you're not in control of your body. The queen and the hive are in control of your body.
Yeah, but they all look so muscly.
They do, but they're also all sweaty because it's really hot on their ships.
And I found out yesterday I do not do humidity very well.
Yeah, sweat. Yuck.
Yeah, maybe not. All right.
No deodorant, no antiperspirant. You know that's good. That doesn't smell good.
Market an all new Borg antiperspirant.
It's better than Axe body spray.
Well, we'll see what happens in Picard. Maybe the Romulans, the whole idea of this whole Borg situation is that they are actually creating deodorant. And that's all
that
the Borg want
great.
To get to achieve perfection. Borg deodorant.
It's deodorant.
What the hell are we talking about, Suzanne?
Personal hygiene. Welcome to the journey.
I've seen online, like, a lot of people don't like the fact that she did not come out of her little room in night because of her depression. And they were saying that the crew needed her.
She was dealing
her.
With depression.
But I'm of the exact same opinion. That is an illness that she needs to get through. She's in no fit condition to lead. So why would the crew need her? She has Chakotay and she has and Tuvok to be able to run the ship for her because she is well within her rights to go through that.
Yeah, depression can be extremely crippling.
It can be. And I mean,
and you don't want someone in charge and making command decisions that's going through something so strong, which is why she used Chakotay and Tuvok to take care of things because she knew she was compromised in a such a way.
Yeah, and that takes a lot of good leadership skills to know when you're not able to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, she was not able to lead at that time. Obviously, she came out of it, but she,
thank goodness.
A lot of her decisions were affected by what she did in Caretaker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Going back to the Equinox for a second, was Janeway right to punish the crew members of the Equinox for following their captain's orders by breaking the Prime Directive when she's broken it numerous times by this point?
That just makes her a major hypocrite when you think about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Because if that's the case, then by association, all of her crew should be punished as well because of all the things that she's done.
Yeah, and why she's going to get court-martialed.
Do you reckon she was maybe jealous that she wasn't the only ship out in the Delta Quadrant?
No, because she was honestly happy when she found them.
Yeah.
She's like, yes, comrades. And then she found out what they were doing.
You see, is it Captain Ransom? Was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's obviously had a lot worse decisions to make than Janeway did. To have to kill aliens to try and get home. And I suppose that's sort of a similar vein to Tuvix's. She decided to basically kill someone. But to punish the crew of the Equinox, I think is one of the most hypocritical things that she's done.
I completely agree because they were just following their captain's orders.
Yeah.
What would have happened if they had tried to mutiny, or even if they could come up with enough people to mutiny?
Do you think the Equinox made the right choice to kill aliens to get home, to turn those snake things into snake juice?
I don't think it was the right choice, but I don't know how they got to that point. So I can't say for sure. I mean, their ship was falling apart.
Some really bad things would have happened.
Yeah. You never know what someone else has gone through.
No, and that's where it's hard to judge. And she did make some really quick judgments on that crew. When, in reality, if the situation were reversed and another starship from the Alpha Quadrant and the Federation were in the Delta Quadrant and saw them making an alliance with the Borg or saw them or found out that she was about to kill Tuvix, etc., they would have had the same harsh reactions, I reckon.
Do you think keeping 7 of 9 violated the Prime Directive too?
What, keeping 7 of 9? What is in at the end of Scorpion and the Gift?
Exactly.
I don't think that broke the Prime Directive, but I don't think it was her decision to deborgify 7 of 9.
And even when she was deborgified, she still wanted to go back to the Borg. How can you justify making these choices for this person?
That's what I've always had trouble with, because you know that 7 of 9 doesn't know any different because she's been a Borg since a child. And then, but at the same time, it's not going to be Janeway's choice.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that one's a very difficult one, because she's a human that's been taken over by something when she was a child. So she's trying to bring her back. And she sees that.
But you don't even know for sure you're getting back to the Alpha Quadrant.
No, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I did just have a thought of a bad Janeway decision, which I thought was pretty bad. When she deleted the wife and then changed all of the bits about that Irish dude.
When she was making him into Chakotay, you mean?
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
But that's terrible. That's a terrible decision. It's not a command decision, but it's still a terrible decision.
Especially when, you know, he became sentient.
So, Suzanne, with all the bits that we've touched on, do you think Janeway made more bad decisions after having a rethink about it all? Made more bad decisions than good, or more good decisions than bad?
I think she made a lot of questionable decisions, but she was just doing the best she can.
Because of the middle of nowhere situation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is what all of us could hope to do, is just do the best we can and try to get through it.
I mean, the episodes that we've looked at, you know, Caretaker, Tuvix, Flesh and Blood, Year of Hell, Scorpion, The Void, the majority of those are big decisions and that have always been the questionable ones. There are probably decisions that she makes in episodes that no one remembers, like, you know, Coda or
Prime Factors.
Yeah, exactly. Like those kind of episodes that are still really good command decisions, but without going through all of the episodes again just for one podcast episode, it's going to be quite difficult to, you know, remember those. So I think there were probably a fair few decent decisions that she's made in there that not everyone remembers straight away. I mean, obviously The Void is one that we remember
definitely,
because The Void is a good episode. I'm fairly sure there would have been stuff that she's done that we don't bring to mind straight away, other than the big episodes that we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
It's been fun talking about Janeway's good and bad decisions today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Oh, let me think. What's an interesting Star Trek sound of
phasers?
See, that's tough, because how do you make a phaser sound? I don't know if you can make that with the human.
Or you can do photon torpedoes.
I'll just be the one that's pew, pew, pew.
Oh, pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
The Discovery phasers. Okay, cool. Awesome choice. And to come back to the point, I think I'm deleting this scene.
Literary Treks.
What was it that caused him not to be with his Paul immediately after coming out? What was it that made that relationship strange? Yeah. And I think it was that Culber had really lost himself in a lot of ways. And while Paul was his anchor, when he came back to Paul, Paul had learned something by losing you. And I think he became the Paul that Hugh needed. And I think that scared you a little bit. Until he sort of found himself again.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Because we've never seen all of those hairy mud bots again.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I would appreciate, though, like a mention in history in season 3. It's like, oh yeah, here's this time where the whole galaxy was crawling with these different hairy mud bots, and rounding them up took years.
That's what brought down the Federation. Harry Mudbots.
That was it. It was Harry Mudbots.
Harry Mudbots. Oh no.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
We got a lot of answers in this episode.
which was really surprising to me. So there, you know, who's Dodge and whatnot, like, that's a thing I expected to find out in episode 10 going into this show, right? And here we are, you know, halfway through episode 1 and we know who Dodge is. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I'm, you know, that's cool that we're getting a lot of information, but getting that information is opening up more questions.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join in the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
Is it still a desktop iTunes app? I have no idea anymore. Yeah. Is it? Or is it a podcast app? Or
Both.
Oh. Okay. Well, whatever it is, just do it, users, listeners,
whatever. People. Aliens.
Species 8472.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. Does anyone have those anymore?
Weren't they really
and
ugly?
Most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website, or grab the RSS link.
Apparently you can get us on iHeartRadio now as well.
Oh, really? Nice.
So, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose message to a Trek FM show and select to the journey, and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. So, Suzanne, when you're not playing with your textured tribbles, where can we find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My handle's KJaneWay8, and occasionally I'll pop up in the Babel Conference. And Liam, when you're not holding up the hype spray to murder Tuvix, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the network?
Oh, dear. So you can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me in the Babel Conference if I, you know, want to post something, I guess. And also on The Edge, Trek FM Star Trek Discovery podcast with Brandi Jackler and Nick Collinson.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. We would like to thank our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you for your continuing support of To the Journey and Trek FM.
So join us next time on To the Journey, where we'll be recasting the role of Vorik and putting in Vin Diesel. But until then, this has been To the Journey. We'll be right back.